This episode is brought to you by Finals Week. May the odds be ever in our favor. Welcome back, everyone, to My Fave Cure Chemist. I'm your host, Geraldo.
And I'm Becca. We're recording this intro on the eve of our synthesis final, so we're going to keep this one short. To all the undergrads and graduate students going through finals and wrapping up their schoolwork right now, good luck and congrats on surviving attempting to learn while working in close proximity to your parents. You did it.
We hope that you're hanging in there during week 78 of quarantine. We've got a great show for y'all this week. Enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to My Fave Queer Chemist. I'm Becca.
And I'm Geraldo. And today we're really excited to introduce you an incredible chemist. Would you mind introducing yourself?
I'm Emmett Ledden. I use he, him, or they, them pronouns. I did my undergrad at Truman State University in Kirksville, Missouri, where I got a BS in chemistry and a BA in psychology. While there, I worked in two groups, the most recent of which was with Dr. Bill Miller III, who did computational biochemistry. Thought that was pretty fun, and then I went to graduate school to continue studying computational biochemistry. So now I'm a PhD candidate at the University of North Texas in Dr. Cisneros' group, and I work with polymerases and DNA repair enzymes.
Oh, that's really cool.
Awesome.
Before we go into these questions, now that you mentioned that you also studied psychology, how was that studying both natural sciences and social sciences?
It was really interesting. So I think like the most interesting part of that was when we did our capstone for psychology, because we didn't really do a capstone for chemistry, was we were in a room that was based about doing a research project. And it's like the first day of class and someone asks how they know something is peer reviewed. And I just kind of looked at them like, okay, so this is going to be like that for this semester. But it was fine. I ended up doing an individual project. It worked out.
That's great. Nice. That's really fun.
Cool. So kind of going along that with your undergrad experience, did you have a supportive LGBTQ plus community in undergrad? And then how was that transition to graduate school?
So I joked early on in undergrad that most of the people at the school were queer. I mean, it's really weird. You wouldn't think about it. It's a school of like 6,000 in middle of nowhere, Missouri. And it had like a pretty strong LGBTQ student organization. In fact, when I got there in 2013, they had just fought for an equality ordinance in the town of Kirksville, which was a really big deal. Yeah. And so they had roughly like 80 plus people regularly show up to their, they call it PRISM meetings. We had like 40 plus people show up in support of gender neutral housing, even though that eventually did kind of fail, maybe came back. There was a lot that happened in that particular realm. So I had a great support system and I had a lot of friends that were also in the LGBTQ plus community. And then I came out as trans my last semester of undergrad. So I had applied as redacted and then came to grad school as Emmett. And so that was kind of an interesting switch, because I got really, really fortunate and was very privileged with my ability to transition kind of in that like 6 month window of time, where I just kind of rushed everything between graduating and starting. Because for me, I really wanted to have a legal name change before starting, just because I was worried that like there'd be something with publication or whatever, like things would go awry somehow if that hadn't happened, especially moving to Texas. And when I started in Texas, that was when Texas was facing the bathroom bill legislation, was that summer, and it had literally failed like a week before I was supposed to move in. And so it was just kind of like all of the cards aligned. 3 days after I changed my name legally was when the military ban was announced. And it was just like everything happening in that time frame was very stressful.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah, that is, wow. Yeah, that's really stressful. How was like going from the really like supportive group of like queer people that you surrounded yourself with in undergrad and then moving to North Texas? Was there any like similarities? Was it very different? Was it what you hoped it would be?
It wasn't horrible. Like Denton itself has a pretty profound LGBTQ plus community. Like they do what they call big pride and the little D, because the big D would be Dallas, so they're the little D. It's cute. And there's an organization called Transcendence International, and so they're a like local trans support group. And so there are people. It just took a few months to like actually find a solid support group. But I feel like that would have been true wherever I went. Was you kind of have to find the people that are like you, and feel that you can fit in, which is really hard at the transitional period.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you mind explaining a little bit how's that process to change your legal name to people that may don't know how that goes? If you don't mind, obviously.
Yeah. So I was a legal resident of Illinois at the time, and so it's state dependent, which is kind of problematic.
Yeah.
And it's actually, I think it's changed since I changed my name even. But when I changed my name, you were required to publish in a newspaper. And so because it's like an older law that's basically like you have to prove that you don't have any debts or whatever. So I had to publish my legal name change in a newspaper for 3 weeks. And I had, so I fill out all the paperwork, I bring it to the courthouse, I set the date, and then I go to the newspaper and I publish my name change for 3 weeks. And then I come back at the date that I picked at the courthouse for a hearing. And so then I go through the hearing and I got my name, like my name change was approved at the hearing, and then I can do all the other legal stuff that I have to do. So go to the DMV, go to Social Security office, go to any previous universities or whatever, and update my information there. And so, yeah, it's just a lot, but it's not a free process. So I had to pay for the name change. I had to pay for publishing in a newspaper. And it was kind of funny. The newspaper I ended up picking was like a 5-minute drive from the courthouse. And it was just like a local farming newspaper. Like it was basically like my grandparents were never going to see it because at the time I didn't tell them that I was changing my name. And so it was just like making decisions like that so that everything could align in like a 2-month span of time.
Yeah. And when you say it's state dependent, you mean the process, or now that you change your name in that state, is it still your legal name in other states, like nationwide?
No, it's, so that also is, we can get to that in a second. So it is state dependent, in which the rules to change your name are state dependent. However, because one legal document doesn't necessarily mean every legal document is changed, technically certain states could have made an argument, they could have argued, they would have been wrong, and they would have lost anything that came out of it, that because my birth certificate didn't have the same name, and I had changed my passport right after I changed my name too. Because all of those documents kind of are in flux in that time period, the legal name change document supersedes everything. But if people wanted to be evil, they could argue with you that say, well, no, your name is this. Well, I have this piece of paper. Well, we don't honor that piece of paper because it's from another court system. And so there have been cases where people have had to go to their home state and say, hey, can you please rectify yourselves, basically.
Right, right. Yeah, so difficult.
Yeah, you would think that it would not be that difficult.
Right, no, yeah. And that's what I ask. It's like, some people may not consider that. And they're like, they may change their name, but you don't know the process that takes and the time and the money, like you said, and all that. It's like,
yeah.
So my friends in Texas, you're required to get fingerprinted. And then particularly the Denton County Courthouse, the judges that they had there have a pretty big habit of rejecting trans name changes and trans gender marker changes. And Texas is weird because they need specific documentation for sex and gender to change your birth certificate and your driver's license, because those are listed differently in terms of sex and gender. And so there's a lot.
Yeah. Our friend Isaac is from Texas, so we've heard a lot about their struggles with
anything not being that has able to do that.
Exactly, anything that has to do with being trans, it's like there's 7 million more obstacles than are necessary. But
So going a little bit back to graduate school, do you feel supported by the chemistry department at the University of North Texas as an LGBTQ plus person?
So one of the reasons that I picked UNT was their equal opportunity policy had gender identity and gender expression and sexual orientation included in it. So when I was looking for grad schools, I was like, hey, I want to transition when I do that. And so I specifically sought out schools that had like legal protection, even if they weren't like personally fine. And then I ended up at UNT and everything was pretty great. So other than like not, like there's not a gender neutral bathroom in the chemistry building, but there's one like four buildings over, which isn't ideal, but yeah. There are some in some places secretly on campus.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
So I know that you've talked a little bit about this and your journey so far in transitioning and things like that, but if you wouldn't mind kind of going a little bit more in depth in how your experience has been as a trans person in the chemistry field thus far, have there been any specific challenges that have come up, or has it generally been like a positive experience?
There's definitely been certain things that like I've had to work through, but they haven't been like particularly awful experiences. Like last summer I was accepted to a summer school program, and it was like a 2-week program at a dorm, or that was like you would stay overnight at a dorm. Mm-hmm. And it was listed as a community style dorm, and I was like, that's not great for several reasons, including but not limited to like I wouldn't feel comfortable necessarily with either solution there. Mm-hmm. Just because if you're rooming with strangers, you don't know what's happening. And so I reached out to the people in charge of that summer school, and they were super receptive and definitely figured out a reasonable solution to that specific situation. But it's just kind of like they're random situations that you wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. anticipate.
Yeah.
So like everyone from my department really likes one specific bar that's near campus, but that bar only has urinals in the men's restroom. And it's just like, I will occasionally leave the bar to go to a restroom on campus, and people are like, wait, where'd you go? And I'm like, just leave me be. I'll be back in like 10 minutes. You'll forget I was gone.
Yeah. I think that's something that like people really like, I don't know if it's like specifically non-queer people or even like some cis queer people, but people don't think about like restrooms in public ever. Like I know that like we, even in our chemistry building, we have like a few gender neutral restrooms, mm-hmm. and you would never know that they're there because they look like a closet. Like they look like totally hidden. Like you would never know. And even like the single stall bathrooms that are still like labeled as like a certain gender, I don't know. And I've brought it up to people before, and they're like, oh, I never thought of that. Like, oh, I didn't mm-hmm. realize that was like a thing that you have to think about. Being like a non-cis person. I don't know.
It's also like when you bring it up, they're like, oh, I guess that's your bathroom agenda. And it's like, yes, but I literally just want to find a single restroom that I feel comfortable in on any given day.
Right.
There are times where my lab is on the second floor, where I'll go to a different floor. Mm-hmm. Just because for some reason, like I feel like that queer panic that's like, maybe I'm not going to be safe in this restroom that I use every single day.
Yeah.
And like, then someone will be like, why are you on this floor? And it's like, just every time I want to use a bathroom, I don't want to make an ordeal of it. I just want to get in, like do my business and get out. I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to look at people. I just need to pee.
Yeah, definitely. So kind of going into like departmental support also, I know that like here at the University of Michigan, in our health insurance plan, I know that a lot of like gender affirming surgeries and things like that are covered in our health insurance. Do you know if that's the case at North Texas, or kind of what's standing on like the policy side?
So at UNT, graduate students don't get health insurance as something that's part of like their package. But if you bought from the plans that are offered to you, then from what I looked into, stuff like hormones would be covered, but I'm not exactly sure about surgery and stuff. Mm-hmm. But also you'd run, so that also is state dependent, right? Mm-hmm. Where certain states require coverage of gender affirming surgeries, whereas other states are just like, nope, that's 10 to 25 grand up on yourself, like figure it out.
Yeah.
What about your relationship with the lab and coming out as a trans person in your research lab?
I'm not sure if I like officially truly came out. Okay. Like I truly do not remember like a coming out experience outside of one email that I'd sent to someone after visit weekend. Mm-hmm. And then like from that point forward, everything was like Emmett or M or whatever. Like it was never redacted. Like it was just, you are this person now. Okay. And like if people have misgendered me, they're quick to fix it. Like it hasn't really been an issue in my lab. For other aspects of like grad school, I kind of made it a rule for myself where I just wouldn't correct people if they misgendered me when I started, because I was like, eventually someone will figure it out. Like if they're still misgendering me after a year, like someone probably will point them straight. Like, and that worked in my favor. Like I didn't officially have to confront people, which I think took a lot of like frustration and it hurts to get misgendered, but sometimes like if you just make a rule for yourself and then stick to that rule, it feels a little bit better because you're like, haha, now I've outsmarted myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. No, I get that. I am horrible at correcting people. And normally I just like avoid it because I don't like confrontation at all. So I'm like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Like at some point they'll catch on, but it does sting. I don't think that people understand how much it stings.
Yeah.
Whenever it happens, at least for me, like, it's just like, ah, damn, that didn't feel good. But
It is kind of enjoyable being a trans person who gets to correct other people on using other people's pronouns. Mm-hmm. As long as like your friends are okay with it, then then you can be really aggressive with it. And like usually people will figure it out if you're like very stern enough times. And that is always enjoyable to like watch them process through, like, oh, I was being silly there.
Yeah, definitely. Are there like a decent amount of other queer graduate students in the chemistry department? Do you feel like you have like a good community within chemistry?
For the grad, like there's a few, but I personally don't know any out trans people that are also in the graduate community. And so like I know a few people through OSTEM, which is nice, but otherwise they're like it's very small. And we all definitely know each other.
Yeah. Do you find that to be like isolating, or do you have like a decent community outside of chemistry to kind of supplement that?
I'd say that I have a decent community outside of chemistry, and like because those connections that you make in undergrad don't just go away, it's helpful to like have those friends that I made there and be like, okay, look, here's all of the issues I'm having with this problem. And so like I have my grad school friends, and then I have my queer friends, and I have a very, very small overlap of queer grad school friends.
yeah, good.
So how do you think chemistry and other academic spaces in general can better support trans folks?
There's so many ways.
That's good.
So first of all, definitely work on including stuff, policies for your school, for your space, for whatever you're doing. Mm-hmm. So equal opportunity policies that cover gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation. If you're still not on sexual orientation, like I seriously don't know where you've been the last like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Work on programs or work on what, like figure out a way to make name preferences widespread, because it's not just trans people that use a preferred name. Like there are so many cis people that go by nicknames or go by names that aren't like their first name.
Yeah.
And it's honestly kind of ridiculous that it's not as easily made known, like what you actually go by. And so I know I made a long thread on Twitter one time about this, but like if you are going to send mail using a specific name, make sure people are aware if you're going to use a legal name or a preferred name, because if you use a preferred name but you're not out at home and that letter is going to go home, then that outs you, and that's not cool.
Yeah.
And so like stuff like that, or if you're going to send emails a certain way, like just make it known how people are going to use your legal and preferred names in whatever system you have set up.
Yeah,
it would be as simple as just when you were applying to grad school, you know, when they ask you your name, your last name, your address, just add a slot for the preferred name.
And there were a number of schools that did that. Mm-hmm. It's just, if I answer that question, are you going to send me mail to that name? Are you like, what are you going to do with that name? Or is it just like, hey, now you make notes, or if you call me on the phone to use it, or is it going to go like, are you going to email me my acceptance or denial letter? Are you going to mail it to my legal address? Are you going to mail it to my, like my resident address? Like, what are you doing? I just need to know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, that's not, I don't think that that's something that people think about that often, or like people who run admissions departments in different schools. Like, I don't think that that's something they think about, but
And like, even if you get to that point of like a FERPA conversation, it's like, well, I can't tell you this information because of FERPA. A preferred name isn't necessarily covered under that. So then you could have like, you have the mama bear parents or whatever that are calling on their kid Johnny, but Johnny doesn't go by Johnny, like, and then their professor outs them by accidentally or whatever. Like, there are just so many places that things can go wrong if you don't know how information is being controlled, and I think that's one of those particulars is names. But I have a lot of other ideas.
Yeah, that's great.
So, like, gender-neutral housing policies, which a lot of people don't think about, but that's the type of thing that it would actually guide who rooms with who at a visit weekend.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you haven't made known that you're, like, you might have a specific housing need, then you're put in a random room selection with someone and you don't know, like, rooming in general with random people is uncomfortable for, like, if you're queer, because you don't know how to react even in 2020, like, to a queer person existing. That's that.
I remember for both of my REUs, I always saw like, I hope this roommate is not, one, a racist, and second, and homophobe, because, you know, you don't know what you who you're rooming with, and you're gonna spend, at least for an RE, you're gonna spend 2 months with that person. You don't want to feel uncomfortable. Thankfully, none of my roommates were neither racist.
And then, like, the more not cis white guy you are, the more of those problems kind of come up is like, well, am I going to be chastised for my religion? Am I going to be chastised for like XYZ other thing just because I exist as a human being that wasn't the way that you were when you were raised? Like, very stressful.
Yeah,
definitely.
I also think that schools should work on having hormone replacement therapy or HRT at student health centers, because not every school does that. And a lot of schools, they'll cite like, well, we don't want parents to get upset with us as like a reason for not initiating those programs, which your kids are usually over 18. Like, you can't, you can make your own medical decisions.
Yeah.
And
it's the same with like access to birth control and like access to like comprehensive healthcare.
Yeah, like you're an adult, you should be able to make your own medical decisions. But that also gets kind of fuzzy, because certain states, I think most states now have accepted informed consent as a model, but initially that wasn't always the case. And so there were some other problems trying to get HRT if you weren't going through an informed consent means, which for the most part are eliminated, but there are definitely still places where you need to go through the referrals, the psychologist before.
Yeah, I think
that's the way it is in Tennessee, which is where I went to college, because I have a few of my trans friends who have gone through HRT and have had to deal with that.
Not ideal.
Yeah.
Surgery refs, that's something a school counselor should be able to provide. Having counselors that are trained in LGBTQ plus issues, and not just maybe one on a staff of like 15 that has heard the word gay, like health insurances that cover transition and just general transition care. If schools could write surveys in a way that don't, you know, throw everyone under a bus, or make them pick something that's like not realistic or akin to who they actually are, that would also be great. I don't know. I've started like emailing people that write surveys if they have like male and female or other as categories, just because it pisses me off so much.
Yeah
just other.
God, the worst.
Because like, male, female, other, what are you doing? I seriously don't understand.
Sorry.
I have more. I thought about this question a lot.
Oh, that's good. You can,
no, that's good. No. Keep it coming. I don't want to cut you off.
Requiring inclusion training that covers the needs of LGBTQ plus and students.
Yes, we've talked about this on the show before in some previous episodes, of how like PIs and graduate students have to go through like trainings on all sorts of random things, and classes and workshops on all sorts of different things that relate to like career development and good lab practices, but none of those have like anything to do with like respecting and supporting like LGBTQ graduate students, coworkers, and underrepresented minorities in general, like no training. And that's crazy.
Yeah. I remember our ethics, like research ethics class last semester touched no subject of LGBTQ issues. Yeah. It was all about plagiarism and it was all about, you know, being
like research misconduct.
Yeah. It's no subject of LGBTQ. It was like a whole class, a whole term, and no example of LGBTQ issues.
It's like one of the big ones that's come up for a lot of people recently is how do you change your name on a publication? And there are a number of publishing houses that are just like, nope, not doing it. It's published. It's done. We're not touching it. And that just outs people. Like, what are you doing? Even if you have these policies in your workplaces, if you're not going to like continue making policies that actually help people, why are you making policies? I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
Or like who is making those policies? Obviously it's no one like who comes from an underrepresented minority background or like an LGBTQ background.
Yeah. And like, I understand the argument that people shouldn't, I understand the argument that they shouldn't take inclusion training unless they are going to be inclusive. But I think there is a difference between mandating an inclusion training so that you're aware of issues and being able to tout that you have taken a training. And I know that that's an issue that comes up a lot with Safe Zone is like, well, you can take the Safe Zone course and you should take a Safe Zone course, but you're not going to get like a sticker or a symbol that says you are an inclusive, like you know about these issues unless you are willing to work on them and you're willing to be called out and then like have that sticker or symbol or whatever removed if you are not actually supporting students. I don't know. I think that's an important distinction is everyone should be required to take the training, but not everyone should be required to like show others that they've taken the training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
One more, which was including pronoun stickers and buttons at conferences.
Yes.
I think it's very important that it's like an optional thing because this, even as like, even for trans people, there are certain spaces where you wouldn't necessarily know you're comfortable in it until you're in it. And so like when people require them to be put on printed name badges and not being able to change like at the conference, I think that that's kind of a dicey road. And then the same kind of thing with like email signatures and Twitter bios, I think that in particular needs to be a strong recommendation, but it should never be a requirement just because even in like, as a trans person, there was a good solid like 2 years where I was like, I just don't want there to be pronouns. Stop asking me this question, please.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point of like making it optional because that also gives people a lot of like personal power in like how you identify yourself and how you identify yourself depending on the space and the people. And I think you're right. I think definitely like there are places that I feel a lot more comfortable and there are places that I don't feel as comfortable. And so like definitely I think having the option, but definitely making sure that option's there at all opportunities. So what advice would you give your younger self?
I have three pieces of advice for younger Emmett. The first is to high school me. And I just want to say, you can calm the heck down. Like you should maybe sleep sometimes, child. Like I seriously don't know what you're doing. Your AP classes are not worth the stress that you're putting on yourself. Like you're going to do fine regardless. It's college is easier. Stop. Number two, it would be don't wait on the military to change their mind about transition. But also I understand if you want to wait a bit, just things are going to keep changing whether or not you want them to change. And then number three would be to undergrad me is you don't have to wait until you graduate with an undergraduate degree in chemistry to start calling yourself a chemist. You're already a chemist. Just stop waiting for a magical point in time to start using a label. Like you're already a chemist. Just calm down.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. That's amazing.
So, yeah. That's so sweet.
I don't even have my diploma. So. Oh.
We're all over the place.
Yeah, we're all over the place today. So, last question. Who is your chemistry role model and why?
Okay. And I know a lot of people get multiple ones for this one because
yeah.
it's a big question. So, yeah.
So I have two, and also I have one personal and then one that I've never met and mm-hmm. may or may not ever meet. We don't know. And so the one is Dr. Barbara Kramer from Truman. She is just a fantastic human being who's been there through a lot of stuff that I went through in undergrad. And she was actually the first professor that I came out to, which was, well, actually, yeah, it came out to was both bi and trans. It was just kind of like, it happened to be in her office at a weird, like for two different instances. But she is very much like a professor that cares about her students. And that is if, it, I don't think that I want to be a professor, but it like, in general, I feel like the aspect of caring about other human beings is a pretty important life skill.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is Dr. Rachel Burks, because she has some fantastic YouTube videos and is a strong yeah. activist. And I definitely appreciate her work.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, lastly, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter as at mled1, so E-M-L-E-D-D-1. That's
awesome.
It.
Great.
Cool. I think that was all we have for you.
Sorry for rambling.
No, it's great.
It was great. I think we talk a lot about like, oh, what can departments do better and things like that. But I think having an extensive list that like
departments of specific
things that mm-hmm. departments should constantly be evaluating, like what their standing is on these certain aspects
mm-hmm.
of being more inclusive, I think is really useful.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank
of course.
You for
this
coming.
Is great. Talk later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Remember to fill out the nomination form on our Twitter if you're interested in being interviewed for the show. You can follow us at MFQCpod.
Take care, everybody, and stay safe. We'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Adios.